What's up, y'all? Y'all are listening to Living Corporate's flagship podcast. If you didn't know, Living Corporate helps organizations build employee engagement and market trust through data analytics and data transformation, our e-learning platform, and brand marketing storytelling. We're so excited for you to be here today. The conversation you're about to hear is going to connect the dots between employee experience and go-to-market effectiveness. If you're not ready, get ready. Here we go. Tiffany Daniels, I told you we was going to do a part two. Welcome back. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. I am, you know, trying to stay energized. I went to a number of events this week where I was surrounded by Black people who are in the work, who understand the importance of taking moments to celebrate and just really sit in our Black joy. And that felt good. It really filled my cup.
You know, for those who maybe didn't check out part one, you are the first and the first managing director for Minnesota Business Coalition for Racial Equity. And again, for those who like may not be familiar with you from either from Living Corporate or, you know, they just coming in for where they coming in from. What does it mean? What does it mean for you to be the managing director for your organization? What is that? What's the implications there? And who do you work with?
Sure. Well, I'll start with just a little background about the coalition. The Minnesota Business Coalition for Racial Equity is a consortium or a club, if you will, of large corporations that are either headquartered in the state of Minnesota or have large operations here. And so we're talking about organizations like General Mills, U.S. Bank, Target, 3M, United Health Group. So really big organizations that for sure sit in the Fortune 5 or the Fortune 100. And this consortium was formed in 2020 in the midst of the racial uprising, really as a declaration that the business community both could and should be doing more to advance racial equity specifically for Black Minnesotans. We talked a little bit about last time the disparities that Black residents in the state of Minnesota experience, and the business community really formed this coalition as a recognition that the private sector has a role to play. And the vision that we cast was really about building a more just and prosperous state with and for Black Minnesotans. And over the last, you know, almost 4 years, the work has certainly evolved. But as its first managing director, I've had the opportunity to really build this coalition into an emerging nonprofit organization. It started as a group of leaders that had similar interests and passion and courage and were really united and unified around this concept of this intersection of business and community and the role of the business community. And has started to evolve into a sustainable organization. And I, you know, am its managing director, which means I essentially act as the CEO. I'm in charge of building a strategy, implementing structures, ensuring that we have programming and activities, that we are driving revenue and managing that revenue appropriately, and that it's in alignment with a lot of our core values, that it's I make sure that those dollars, most of those dollars are going towards Black businesses, that we are listening to community before we act, that for any partnership that we are developing, that it is not the business community or the coalition saying, this is the work that we want to do, or wow, we've got a really good idea that we can splash our brand all over. It's really about creating deep connections, forging relationships, listening to the experts and the leaders and folks that are really closely connected and in close proximity with community and the lived experience that we want to address to say, hey, now let's ideate and brainstorm together about how resources from the business community can be transformative or can accelerate whatever activity or initiative that you have going on. And for the work that we do, we've got really three big focus areas. And those focus areas exist because they are places where the business community is really positioned to have an outsized impact. The first for us is employment opportunity. The coalition has almost 40 member organizations. We employ hundreds of thousands of people. So it makes sense that we are thinking about how we're hiring, how we're retaining, how we are advancing Black talent specifically in our member organizations. The second for us is Black business development. What are the ways in which the business community can invest in a thriving ecosystem for Black entrepreneurs, with the ultimate goal of building a procurement pipeline into our member companies? Yet we recognize that there is a tremendous amount of work that needs to be done, that has to be done, before Black-owned businesses can serve as suppliers for some of the world's largest enterprises. And then lastly, and this area is really important to me personally, and I always love talking about it, and that focus area is community well-being. And we define community well-being as advancing just practices in housing, safety, and policing. And that pillar of our work is so important because we cannot lose sight of the fact that MBCRE and a number of other equity-focused or diversity-focused initiatives that were born in 2020 came out of a public safety tragedy. That what we were evaluating was, what are all of the forces that are at play that can allow someone like George Floyd to be murdered in daylight by a peace officer and nobody do anything? There are a lot of negative forces at play. And our work there continues to keep that conversation at the forefront. We do some advocacy with our state legislature around policing and public safety, as well as homeownership. But it's really about, how do we keep that conversation front and center?
So, you know, it's interesting to your point about, and those three pillars sound incredible, right? And they all not only make individual strategic sense, but I understand like the through line between each of them. As I think about where we are today, and I look at the landscape of diversity, mm-hmm. equity, inclusion efforts, as well as the state of policing in Minnesota, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. today, compared to the day that George Floyd was murdered, I kind of sit back and I go, all right, so like, what are we doing? Not what is your org doing, like, what are we doing, right? I'm in a season, and I've really, frankly, I've been there for a while. I ain't gonna hold you, Tiffany. I've been there for a second, but of just challenging some of the emotionally driven, almost kind of theater and the theatrical nature and performative nature of this, a lot of what this work is, right? And I think about it like, mm-hmm. how much time and money is spent on like the look of something, like, oh, we're going to invite this person out to this event, or we're going to even create an event that has this speaker that we're going to pay $100,000 to, right?
Listen, we are just past Black History Month, okay? And there's a reason why Black History Month is my busiest month, right? For a lot of these reasons. And I'm sure there are a number of speakers and folks that can attest to Black History Month is busy. Now, I will say, and I was reading an article recently about why this most recent Black History Month felt a little quiet.
Right.
And I think some of that is where you're headed in terms of, we have evolved out a bit, I'll say. And I think the conditions that led to the formation of organizations like the Minnesota Business Coalition for Racial Equity, those conditions have shifted pretty significantly. Mm-hmm. And a lot of times people talk about them shifting, starting with the affirmative action decision in the Supreme Court. I'd say that I felt them shifting even earlier than that. And we can talk about that for sure. But we got to acknowledge that what was driving us in 2020 is not the same thing that's driving us today. And until individuals, organizations get clear about what is driving them to engage and invest in the work, then it absolutely will not sustain.
You know, to your point, right? I think like there's certain things, and you being this, working this space, like there are things that when I talk to folks who claim to be in like the employee experience or DEI space or just the people strategy space, things that they say that signal to me that they're, in terms of like how much they're paying attention and how on the ground they are. So to your point, like if I'm talking to somebody and they say, well, hey, last year we really saw a divestment from this work or this space, right? If they speak about things in this really hyper recent context, then I know that they're not really like, they're not really a real hitter like that, right? So like so to like to your point, right? Like I remember it, like the year that George Floyd was murdered, like 3 to 6 months after that, there are already pressures and questions about, okay, hey, how long do we have to make it just about Black people? When can we talk about other groups? Like that was back 4 years ago, right? I recall those discussions and the pressure and like people on the front lines of the work in the space having to fight and justify and say, hey, we're going to be inclusive and we're going to be thoughtful and we're going to be mindful of other groups and demographics as anti-Semitism continue to be on a really sharp rise, as well as anti-East Asian racism continue to be on a really sharp rise. It was like, hey, we're going to make sure that we're acknowledging everything. At the same time, we're not going to put down, we're not going to like put down one group to lift up another. We're not going to deprioritize, whatever case. There's enough space for everyone to be considered and to be thought mindful of. So I remember that back then. And so to your point though, like this idea of, okay, hey, yep, affirmative action has been struck down. All of a sudden now we're in a whole new world than we were, you know, 3 years prior to that. Like, that's just isn't true. So you again, like you one of them ones, right? You sit and you do this work. You've been doing this work. Talk to me about the signs you saw earlier than that, to your point of illusion. Like, what did you see and what were your signals that like, hey, okay, I'm seeing that the fervor, the emotional excitement and engagement around this is waning. Like, what were your early signs?
As I reflect, there have been really three big moments that I have felt regression happening. Hmm. And I feel like the first was actually the biggest. Hmm. And the first was in, I'd say, late 2021, early 2022, organizations were starting to welcome their workforce back in person. And if you recall, there were macroeconomic forces that were really dominating the conversation. People were talking about supply chains. People were talking about the inflationary pressures that businesses were navigating. And given that reality, that truth, and given its financial impact in organizations, it took a lot of people off of the DEI square and put them both feet planted firmly in the we're here to make money square. Mm-hmm. And that was a really big shift that I certainly felt here in leading a corporate coalition. Mm-hmm. The second, and you are absolutely spot on, was once we welcomed those employees back into the workplace, other communities of color started to have questions about why there was this focus only on Black communities and Black employees. For sure, there are other challenges to address in other communities. We should be talking about those. And I know that organizations were starting to hear that feedback in their engagement surveys and hear it as they were connecting with employee resource groups. And so that was another that started to really beg the question or force the question around, how do we talk about our emphasis on Black communities and Black employees? And we say things like a rising tide lifts all boats, but how do we demonstrate that? Right. And as an organization, are we willing to stand on business if we are challenged by another group to say, we're going to double down in our commitment to Black employees and Black communities, because we know that investing in the least of us, investing in those groups that have been systematically oppressed and marginalized, it is going to have an impact on other communities. Give us time and watch it work. Companies weren't willing to say that. And then you have the Supreme Court decision in late June of 2023. And that, I think, was really for the stragglers. Mm-hmm. right? To say, you know what? We are really not about this life. And it was emphasized by the legislative environment. And when you have things happening like Republican attorneys general sending letters to CEOs of the Fortune 100, basically putting them on notice to say, this DEI work that you're talking about, right, it might be unconstitutional and you don't want the smoke, mm-hmm. right? Whether that's true or not, whether that's based in fact or not, there is now this fear from organizations that if I am being courageous, if I am leaning into commitments that I made 3 or 4 years ago that will disproportionately impact a certain community, should I be talking about that? How can I talk about that? How can I invest, and will I be challenged on if I'm investing equitably or not? And the fear in and of itself has forced a number of organizations, I think, into the background to say, we are afraid of what might happen. Not even necessarily of there being litigation, but we are afraid of being in the court of public opinion. We are afraid of what happens if someone writes a news story, or if there is a conversation on TikTok or in other social media platforms. Like, really, that to me is some of the risks that organizations are trying to mitigate.
You know, so much what I'm realizing and learning about corporate America, so much of it is fear driven and fear based, mm-hmm. right? Like, there's fear. There's an element of fear in everything. There's an element of fear in how you manage your employees. There's an element of fear mm-hmm. in how you like keep your own personal job. There's an element of fear mm-hmm. in terms of how you manage and like perform in the market. Like, there's just fear everywhere. Right? There's a threat everywhere, and it's like everyone's managing against and trying. And it's like, and it wasn't until I like start focusing on living corporate full time, and I was able to kind of talk to other folks or talk to the people I used to be coworkers with, the people I used to manage, or the people that I used to report to, like just people in my corporate community. And I would just kind of listen to how they would talk about just their day to day. And I'm over here like, oh, this is terrifying. I mean,
as someone that has run businesses in a large corporation, especially if you are, I'd say, manager, director level plus, a lot of your day-to-day is about risk mitigation. Mm-hmm. We don't talk about it in terms of risk mitigation, but that's what it is. I am doing work to ensure that something bad doesn't happen.
Right.
That's why we're there. And that is a core behavior that is pervasive in a lot of corporations. We don't talk about it like that. A lot of us don't want to diminish our work down to risk mitigation. But if we were to be really honest about what's happening, we're here to prevent the bad and not necessarily drive the good.
And see, that's like a stark, there's just such a stark difference in those attitudes, right? Playing, and that's, I hate when people do sports analogies, but I'm gonna do it anyway. So, you know, you're playing prevent defense. That's different than actually trying to make an impact and like impose yourself on something. No, you're just trying to make...
Playing not to lose is different than playing to win.
Come on. And so there's this attitude today. And I mean, I remember, Tiffany, I was working at this global survey company, tech company. And I remember talking to like certain executive leaders on the team. And like, there would be things going on. Like, shoot, like what's happening in, what's happening in Palestine, right? And like, because that's been going on for longer than October 7th. I know that's shocking for a lot of people like who didn't know, but it has. So this was some years ago, and we were talking about just statements, whatever we wanted to make. And we had this little rubric. Okay. And one of the things on the rubric was, well, what are other people saying and doing? And I remember asking out loud, why does it matter what other organizations are saying and doing? Well, because we don't want to be out. I said, I think we have an opportunity. And then we kind of, we took a step back. It's like just about on principle, not about any one particular issue. Right. But for me, to your point, when I think about the world of work, I think about playing to win. And winning in my world looks like creating a better and more equitable and fairer place for everybody. When you and typically organizations that are trying to play to win, I've noticed they have a greater impact on their a more positive impact on their employees and the markets they serve. Whereas if they're just playing not to lose, well, we're not going to say anything because so-and-so didn't say anything. Well, we're not going to say anything more than this because our chief competitor only said more than this. Okay, well, are they running the company? Are they running this company? Or are you running this company? Are they leading over here? Are you? What are you going to say? What are you going to do? I mean, and then all the time, I'm not about to preach, but then sometimes you kind of can tell the same people that move like that kind of move like that in real life, but in their personal life. But we're not going to go in there. Like, we ain't even going to do that.
That's a different podcast.
We ain't even going to do that. All right.
there is what you just described is really essentially the business case for inclusion. It is that if you are fostering an environment where people can contribute, if you've got people who want to play to win and are comfortable bringing those ideas forward, are comfortable contributing at a high level in their organization, feel like they can be as authentic a version of themselves as they want to, then it contributes to the performance of the organization, right? Because none of us win or none of us will win if we are all here playing not to lose.
So, you know, to that end and about kind of like this idea of like impact and this regression, because a lot of people's 10 toes, they said it was 10 toes down. I'm counting toes, Tiffany. I'm seeing like two or three now. You feel me? So, so my position is that this work of fairness and experience, it's not going to be sustainable in any other context than hard numbers through clear data. The last time we spoke, we talked about it kind of sort of towards the end. That's why I got it. So I was like, okay, we about to go, we go a whole another hour. So like, let's just bring it back for part two. We talked about this idea of, and frankly, the reality of kind of like where the coalition is today. And the openness of the member organizations to share their data. Like, can we, let's pick up that conversation and like, first of all, like, where did that come from? Why is that important for you? What is your vision and your dream of being able to be that data driven storyteller and fact finder and insights gatherer for some of these Fortune 100 and Fortune 500 businesses? That's, I want to learn more about that.
I mean, it starts with a conversation we were just having a few moments ago about the willingness of corporations to continue to engage in DEI or social impact work, whatever moniker it has in the organization, right? We're talking about impacting the lives of people and changing the trajectory of what Black life has looked like in this country. That's what we're talking about, right? And over the last couple years, right, as we noted, the shift did not start to happen, you know, 8 or 9 months ago with the affirmative action decision. But as we've seen, there has become a greater need for organizations to get clear about why they are engaging in impact work. Because as we've witnessed, as priorities start to grow and or shift in an organization, as the external environment or the legislative environment starts to evolve, if an organization is not really clear on why social impact or justice work or the work of DEI is important to the core of what they do,
right,
then it will not sustain. And I mean, it has to be interwoven into almost every aspect of an organization, right? As critical and as core to the mission of the organization should be its point of view on driving more equity in society. And once they've done that, it will be very difficult to unwind the work. This divestment will be challenging because it's so crucial to the business.
Right.
And as it becomes more crucial to the business and you start to see it as a function of doing business, then that measurement and that data is a requirement. Because anything that is crucial and core to your business and how you make money, you measure. Mm-hmm. Organizations measure how efficient their supply chain is. They measure how much waste they have if they're a manufacturer. They measure their carbon footprint. We measure all of these things because we understand how important it is to do business. And I think it is essential to have that same approach to data and measurement around diversity, equity, inclusion, and belonging objectives and goals as it is for any other function in the business.
You know, and this is where I get turned up, right? Because I 1000% agree with this idea of, hey, anything that is really valuable and that people respect, like I'm hitting my arm on my pocket. Anything that's really that people get excited about and that they respect, they measure. Right. Mm-hmm. And for the most part, they speak to with some intention of intelligence. Right. You're not just blathering on and say, like, if we were going to have, let's say, like at NASA, you're not going to just have a rocket influencer show up at NASA talking about rockets. OK, you're going to have a scientist. They're going to know they're going to have some type of degrees. They're going to know what they're talking about. They're going to have some data to justify whatever their position is. And they're going to have some meaningful dialogue around rockets. Think diversity, yes, equity, inclusion, and frankly, even just taking that moniker, that name off of it, when we talk about people and people experience, for some reason it's one of the few spaces that we're not as stringent on and expectant when it comes to measurement and like really critical systems type intelligence and discussion. It's just not treated with the same level of gravitas that something more technical or even in building like a widget. Like, so let's say Budweiser. So Budweiser, they have a manufacturing line. When let's say they're talking about how to like increase efficiency of like just the products that are coming on the line. When they talk about like a widget or a cog, they're going to talk specifically, scientifically, technically, and just structurally about, hey, this is what this is, and this is why it's important, because it's connected to this thing. And if this widget isn't right, then it's going to impact this, which then impacts that, and dollars. We want to increase the efficiency of this widget because it's going to do this, and that. Like, not only is that something that might be explicitly stated, but it's also just like intrinsically understood. Like, hey, we're doing this because because this is tied directly into how we engage and serve the market. Or our markets, excuse me. Mm-hmm. I'm so eager. Like, I'm telling you, I'll be up at night. I'm so excited about the prospect of the discussions around experience management getting to that level of scrutiny. Because, and I really believe, against those three telltale signs you said earlier, I really believe that this content, this environment is forcing us to do that. I believe that in the next 2-3 years, if you're not being systems thinking, if you don't have a systems thinking or systems approach to this work, it's just not going to be heard in the same way. I'm not saying there won't be somebody who leads diversity, equity, inclusion at your company. They're probably going to be like an associate, or it'll be a junior type side task. It's not going to be some huge function. I just don't think so. So as you talk about like data, right, and you talk about like the importance to measure, what was it like having those discussions with the members of your coalition? Because the last time we spoke, I recall you saying that like there's a willingness and an openness and a readiness to share. How did we get there? What did that look like?
Yeah. I mean, it starts with the recognition that, especially if you work in a corporate environment, you are comfortable being quantitatively motivated.
Hmm. Tell me more about that.
I'll give you an example. I ran businesses at a food manufacturer, and every month we knew how much volume, how many units we had to ship to retailers to be able to deliver the financial commitments of the organization. And it's measured daily. Every day, a report goes out that says, this is how many units you've shipped today. This is how much of the month is overlapped. This is how much you got to ship to be able for us to still hit this number. And based on what that reporting says, it drives activity and action and accountability in the organization. If something's not happening, you know who to go to, you know where to brainstorm, you kind of know where to triage. And I think our fear, and I'll say this, I think there's been a fear of data and fear of information as it relates to DEI work has been about accountability. We're afraid of the accountability. We're afraid of, because we come from a culture of needing to understand whose fault it is.
Yeah.
Who's not doing their job if we're not hitting this number? What does that mean? We're afraid of what it might say. And in order for us to continue to sustain engagement, we have got to apply, I won't say the same, but a similar quantitative motivation around this work too, to say, we want to be honest about where we are. Mm-hmm. And having a clear sense of where we stand as a coalition tells us where we need to do more work. It tells us where to focus our energy and our action. And it gives our members a very clear sense of when you can celebrate, like when you've hit it. And we cannot underestimate the importance of hitting a goal and that feeling, right? That momentum that it builds in individuals and in organizations, right? And when you set a goal and you hit it, it begets more goal setting and more goal hitting. And you can't build that momentum if you don't have a sense of where you are, you don't have a sense of where you're going, and how far you are from that goal.
Yeah, I mean, I think we talked about this last time. And if we didn't, then I'll touch it really quick. Here is, organizations are deathly afraid of looking in the mirror. They can't stand their own reflections, yeah. Right? Like,
yeah.
And so that's why I found it so intriguing when you mentioned like the willingness of your member organizations and your coalition to share their data, because there's something there. Now, of course, there's different levels. There's anonymized data. But the point still is, though, the willingness to actually to do that. You know, for me, I think about the future of data visualization and analysis related to experience. It's less about counting how many people are in a seat, right? It's less about, okay, you know, your organization is 70% women, or it's this or it's that. Like, it's more about connecting the dots between representation, sentiment, performance, benefits elections, go-to-market performance, and employee experience, customer experience. Like, the day that we can provide that level of analysis to see the whole story, hey, like, your organization has this representation, and that creates, this is the trickle down, or this is the ripple effects, the downstream or extended impact to how you're showing up in the market. Like, that's the type of like analysis that I believe is the future. I don't know. Like, I don't have such a high degree of self-importance to believe that like a white executive team is going to look at their organization and see it be majority white and then go, oh, golly gee willikers, we need to change something. I don't know if people like do that, right? Like they might be like, cool.
No.
Go ahead.
They need to.
They do.
They absolutely, they must.
Go ahead.
Because if you've looked at how the demographics in this country are changing for the last, let's just say, 2 decades, right? Any organization that is banking its growth on the growth of white men or even white families is building a plan to lose in the marketplace.
That's a fact. No, that's a fact. And hold on. And I respect that. And I agree. What I was saying is, I don't think that the white executive team is going to look and go, oh, my organization is 70% white. I don't think they're going to go, golly, you really make a problem. Because, Tiffany, because people aren't thinking systemically. So the part B is, hey, you might look at this and think it's fine. Because in your mind, you'll say, we're 30% diverse, right? Because that's how we always flip these stories. But it's like, hey, let's look at your representation against market trends. Mm-hmm. You have these ideal stakeholders you're trying to engage. Let's look at these zip codes you're selling to, and let's look at where their demographics are now. And then let's also look at where they're projected to be in the next 10 to 15 years. You're not going to win, but it's going to take someone doing that level of analysis and more in a really easy to digest way from my perspective, for organizations to then get on the board and get on the train and say, okay, great. Now we need to mobilize and shift these policies. We need to change our hiring strategy. We need to change our talent recruitment and retention strategies. We need to change our benefit strategies. But until that, right? Because Tiffany, like you preach it to the choir. It almost mm-hmm. seems like some of these organizations though are just like rushing to fail, right? Like, and it's like, it just is what it is. Well, we're just a majority male company, and that's just the way it's going to be. We're just a majority white company. This is the way it's going to be. Well, we don't have any women in senior level representation, and we have no real succession planning for historically marginalized groups, and that's just the way it's going to be. Maybe I might still have a little bit of optimism, but I believe that there's a percentage of those orgs that when presented with the right information, pessimistically, I'm no longer on the human, on the empathy side. I'm saying on just the business side, are going to go, well, doggone, we got to do something. I mean, this data shows we got to do something. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. So when I think about the future in this work, in this space, and like the role that your org, because you have the trust equity from years of working with these incredible brands, what excites you about like the next, you know, year or so as y'all continue in this journey, like in terms of gathering more data and analyzing information, like what do you get? What gets your hope up?
Yeah. I'm gonna answer that in a minute. I'm gonna go back to, I just got to comment on what you were saying, because I think there are organizations who see that relationship between this is what the marketplace is starting to look like, and this is what we look like, and we got to do something about it.
Right.
I don't think that organizations don't see that gap. In fact, I've been in rooms and conversations where folks are acknowledging that gap.
Yeah.
Where it falls down is how urgently that transformation needs to occur to be able to then see an impact in your business and in the marketplace, right? So we think we have more time than we do.
Okay.
And all the things that you talk about around, all right, if you want to now build a more inclusive, a more diverse workplace and workforce, then you're going to have to evolve some systems and some practices and some behaviors and some norms and potentially become a different organization than you are today. And that takes time. Mm-hmm. And I think companies can get arrogant, and we can think that, like, hey, we got it good over here. We're the cool kids. You should want to be over here. And then you invite people into over here, and they're like, it's dirty in here. It stinks. I don't want to work here. Right. Why are people yelling? I don't want to be here. Right. Mm-hmm. And we got to really be honest about how quickly we need to evolve our workplaces to then align with the goals and objectives that we are setting as an organization. So
let me back up and spend a block back. You know what I'm saying? Ain't nothing wrong. I got to do some, I throw this thing. So here's my question back to you, to your point about, cause you're right. Right. Like, I agree with you that I don't think organizations are just wholly ignorant to, mm-hmm. I mean, I don't know, like, I mean, like there's all types of media pundits and politicians who are running whole campaigns or things on the Browning of America and this great replacement theory and all that nonsense there. So I agree that I believe that there's an understanding, there's a belief and an awareness of it. To your point, mm-hmm. like the urgency factor is the thing, mm-hmm. right? So my follow-up to that is, do you believe that today the data is being presented in such a way that conveys the sense of urgency and provides some level of longitudinal view to say, hey, this is not something you need to sit on your hands about. Do you think do you think that exists today? And do you think that it's being clear that, hey, no, this is an urgent problem you need to fix right now?
There's certainly, I don't think that the urgency is being felt, but I think some of that is because leaders don't feel the urgency individually. Hmm. So if you are a leader in an organization and you live in an environment and everybody looks like you, you drop your kids off at school where everybody still looks like them, and everybody in your ecosystem and your community looks like you, it's hard for you to believe that America is changing because you can't see it. Mm-hmm. Right? So you hear this noise in this conversation and you think it's just noise. Mm-hmm. Like, what are they talking about? Right? Mm-hmm. My kids still go to all-white school. You know, there is such a need for leaders of any type to just increase their proximity to other people, other groups. You got to burst your own bubble and get out in the world and live some. Because I think if we were truly doing that, if the people that are sitting in leadership positions in organizations, and I see this a lot, I've worked in organizations where I know this is not happening. If we were to get out of our own comfort zones, we would feel that urgency differently. We would see it happening.
Yeah, no.
Like go, like get out of your car and go get on a bus.
Yeah.
Take a bus to work.
Yeah.
And tell me if you don't feel that America is evolving faster than you're talking about it at work.
So, one, I want to say I'm excited about the fact that there are other organizations, there's leaders like yourself who are out here having the real conversations, doing the work, and not, you know what I'm saying, putting together electric slide events and whatever else is going on, like actually doing real work to make sure that we're progressing and having systemic impact. I love the work of your coalition. When I think about the next chapter or the next season of your organization, right? And we continue to talk about it, this pivoting out of like the emotionality that was 2020 and into real tangible, like harder, more challenging conversations about measuring for impact. Mm-hmm. What excites you, right? Like this work is exhausting, right? Off mic, we talked about this work is exhausting. It's draining. The high demand of your time and your energy. You give your best. You give your mental and emotional best to this work. I think it's really unique in that way for in this work of just equity and fairness and experience and DEI, whatever else you want to call it, JEDI, IND. Oftentimes the people who are leading, who are really authentically leading, they give the best of every part of themselves. So I know it's easy to get low, and we should honor those low moments too. Mm-hmm. And not but, as you think about the next 12 to 18 months, what are you most excited about?
Yeah. I am excited, and you mentioned the data piece, and I too am excited about that, especially as a business leader. And I'm excited for a couple reasons. I'm excited first and foremost because once we start to see where we are, how far we've come, how far we still have left to go, it will start to illuminate opportunities that we can get after faster. Mm-hmm. When you are trying to feel around in the dark it takes you a while, right? Like mm-hmm. think about in your own house, it seems like it takes you forever to find that light switch when you're in the dark, right? Mm-hmm. But when it's light in your house, you know exactly where the light switch is. You know exactly where to go for impact. Mm-hmm. And data does that. It has illuminating power. And it will show us, I believe, low-hanging fruit, opportunities that have been hiding in plain sight for us to get after. You know, the coalition is going to start to do some work in the later part of this year around supporting Black-owned businesses and suppliers here. And there's some low-hanging fruit there. It's not calculus. So that's the one thing that I am excited about, just starting to illuminate those opportunities. The second will be how far we can go together. What I love about a coalition is the power of working together, the collective impact, this idea of impact at scale. And some of the companies that we have around the NBCRE table, if they were working together, we could go really far. And once you crystallize what your goals are, how far you are from achieving that goal, then it becomes much easier for us to lock arms or hold hands and put energy and effort and resources against those opportunities. And those are the two things that I'm the most excited about: knowing where to go and almost surpassing that because we're working together.
I mean, Tiffany, to say I'm excited for you is just an understatement. Also, side note, Ayo, like, you can accept my LinkedIn request. You know what I'm saying? Like, we cool now. Like, you should.
I'm over here. I'll get on that.
I'm over here looking up your stuff. I'm doing my research. That mug still say, hold on. It say pending.
Does it say pending?
Hold on. Let me tell you something. Let me tell you what it really said. It said connect, because it said pending a couple weeks ago. So I was like, oh, she must have rejected my request. Doggone. Look at that. I got to send another one. I don't know what happened. But anyway, I'm teasing you, Tiffany.
I didn't do that.
I'm teasing you. Listen, Tiffany Daniels, Managing Director of the Minnesota Business Coalition for Racial Equity. Tiffany, it's always a pleasure and an honor. Thank you so much for being a guest on Living Corporate. I want to make sure that people know where they can learn and find out more about you, your work, how they can get involved, all of that. So I'm going to give you space to plug it up.
For sure. You can always go to mbcre.org to learn about the work that we're doing, or you can follow us on social. Our LinkedIn is really active. You can hear from our members, hear about our partnerships, kind of see the work that we're doing in Minnesota and the impact that we're having in real time.
Love it. Talk to you soon. Bye, y'all.
Bye.
Yo, that's it, y'all. Appreciate y'all for checking out Living Corporate. Make sure you click the link in the show notes to learn more about our guests, the things we got going on, our latest merch, all that, okay? Till next time, this has been Zach. I love y'all. Peace.
Living Corporate is a podcast by Living Corporate LLC. Our logo was designed by David Dawkins. Our theme music was produced by Ken Brown. Additional music production by Antoine Franklin for Musical Elevation. Post-production is handled by Jeremy Jackson. Got a topic suggestion? Email us at livingcorporatepodcast@gmail.com. You can find us online on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and living-corporate.com. Thanks for listening. Stay tuned.